Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So before we begin with this morning's class, I'd like to just take a moment to review from Thursday, when Chaturatma Prabhu spoke about the subtopic of Bharat Maharaj, he, because I didn't inform him properly, he didn't really cover the overall pastime. And for some of you who are new, I just wanted to make sure that you understood what we're talking about. So in brief, the story of King Bharat before this morning's class. Bharat was the son of whom? Rishabhdev, yes. King Rishabhdev, great ruler of the earth, retired. And when he retired, he gave important lessons to his 100 sons, headed by Bharat. So that conversation constitutes a really beautiful part of the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, very famous verses, well-known verses, teachings of Lord Rishabhdev. Bharat Maharaj then became the king of the earth. He ruled so well that the entire planet was named after him, Bharat Varsha. And when he retired, he went to the forest to perform austerities, as is the way of the king. Although he had every happiness and comfort, he went to live an austere life in the forest. So there he meditated very deeply. And one day, his meditation was interrupted by the sound of a tiger roaring. He opened his eyes and he saw a female deer jumping across the river, being pursued by a tiger. So out of her, in her terror, this poor deer gave birth there in the river. And the helpless infant deer was floating down the stream. So seeing all this, Bharat, out of his compassion, naturally grabbed the deer, and the mother was killed. So he became the sole protector of this baby deer. And in the course of the next couple of years, he became so attached to this deer that he could not meditate properly and was constantly thinking, where is the deer? And the deer was very affectionate to him, the deer's only family. So when he died, he was thinking anxiously, where is this deer? And as a result of that, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, whatever consciousness we've developed at the moment of our death determines our next body, right? So he became a deer in his next life. But because of his great enlightenment, he was a cognizant deer, and he was aware of what had happened and aware of how he had erred in his past life. So he lived near the hermitage of some great sages, ate their remnants, and awaited his term of embodiment as a deer. Then in his third life, the next life, he was born as Judha Bharat. Judha means like dull. So he took birth as a son of a Brahmin, but a very simple person who could not speak, who could not do things properly. His father was very disappointed with him. He could not perform the Vedic rites. And this Judha Bharat was actually very brilliant, but he chose not to be involved with anyone, and therefore he played this role as the dull person. So being very marginalized in society, he was kidnapped by some Kali worshippers to sacrifice before goddess Kali. And Kali was not pleased, knowing this to be a great Vaishnava, so she, instead of accepting the sacrifice of Judha Bharat, she sacrificed all the dacoits who had kidnapped him for this this inhuman human sacrifice. And anyway, hi Bo. This is, in brief, the story of the three lives of Judha Bharat. It constitutes a good part of the fifth canto. And in our future Leela classes, we'll make sure that the speakers are really prepared to give you the overview that it's supposed to be. So the importance of that particular topic at this point in the curriculum is to illustrate the idea of multiple lifetimes, how the soul can go from body to body according to its consciousness. All right, so any further comments on that before we move on? Yes, Shyamala. I believe that was his given name, huh? Judha Bharat? Yeah, I don't believe that's mentioned specifically. Why? just one of those mystical coincidences. The things carry over from life to life. All right, so then let's go on. Anything else? Yes, Rupa Chandra Prabhu. Yes. A good point, yes. That's a beautiful point, yes. Rupa Chandra Prabhu was pointing out that when he was meditating, although he reached a very high level of bhava, preliminary love of God, he still fell down due to lack of association. Right? So this was the lesson that the deer learned, and the deer then subsequently stayed with the devotees. Okay, good. There are many beautiful nuances like that in this pastime. So I believe we'll study it later in the curriculum. But for today, we are in the first canto again. This is verse number 28 of the third chapter. So when the sages at Naimisharanya gather to ask about the purpose of life, the future of Dharma, now that Krishna was leaving, one of the questions they raised was, can you tell us about Krishna's incarnations? So this subsequent chapter, the questions are asked in the first chapter. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness and summarized in the second chapter. Then in the third chapter, the entire topic is about the incarnations or avatars of Lord Krishna. So after listing a couple of dozen of these incarnations, Sutta Goswami, the speaker, summarizes with this important verse, which I believe is known as one of the Mahavakyas, the great dictums of Srimad Bhagavatam. Let's go to the synonyms. We'll just repeat the synonyms together, please. Ete, all these, cha, and angsa, plenary portions, kala, portions of the plenary portions, pungsa, of the Supreme, Krishna, Lord Krishna, tu, but, Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, swayam, in person, Indrari, the enemies of Indra, vyakalam, disturbed, lokam, all the planets, Mirayanti, gives protection, yuge, in different ages. Ete changsa kala pungsa. Krishnas tu Bhagavan swayam. Indrari vyakulam lokam. Mridayanti yuge. Ete changsa kalakpungsa. Krishnas tu Bhagavan swayam. Indrari vyakulam lokam. Mridayanti yuge. Anyone like to chant? Ete changsa kala pumsa. Krishnas tu Bhagavan swayam. Indrari vyakulam lokam. Mridayanti yuge. Ete changsa kala pumsa. Krishnas tu Bhagavan swayam. Indrari vyakalam lokam. Mridayanti yuge. Ete chamsa kala pumsa. Krishnas tu Bhagavan swayam. Indrari vyakulam lokam. Mridayanti yuge. Anyone else? All right. Translation. Let's say this together. All of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets wherever there is a disturbance created by the atheists. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists. Before we read the purport, who can say what is the meaning of plenary? So what is a plenary portion? How do you have a full portion? Anyone can explain? Yes, like that. That's right. Complete, but also not the whole thing. Right, just like the like a piece of pie is a plenary portion of the pie. It is not different than the whole pie in that the contents are the same, but it will, one piece will feed one average person. Not Pratik, but the average person. Okay. Pratik can eat the whole pie. So that's the difference. It is constitutionally one, or in qualitatively one, but quantitatively different. That is plenary portion. Okay? Very good. So who'd like to start reading? Somebody near the mic? Go ahead. There you go.
In this particular stanza, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is distinguished from other incarnations. He is counted amongst the avatars, incarnations, because out of his causeless mercy, the Lord descends from his transcendental abode. Avatara means one who descends. All the incarnations of the Lord, including the Lord himself, descend on the different planets of the material world as also in different species of life to fulfill particular missions. Sometimes he comes himself and sometimes his different plenary portions or parts of the plenary portions or his differentiated portions directly or indirectly empowered by him descend on this material world to execute certain specific functions. Originally the Lord is full of all opulences, all prowess, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge and all renunciation. When they are partly manifested through the plenary portions or parts of plenary portions, it should be noted that certain manifestations of his different powers are required for those particular functions. When in the room small electric bulbs are displayed, it doesn't mean that the electric powerhouse is limited by the small bulbs. The same powerhouse can supply power to operate large-scale industrial dynamos with greater volts. Similarly, the incarnations of the Lord display limited powers because so much power is needed at that particular time.
As an electric engineer, do you understand this? Okay. Okay. Venka, you want to read the next paragraph?
For example, Lord Parushama and Lord Nrsimha displayed unusual opulence by killing the disobedient Kshatriyas 21 times and killing the greatly powerful atheist Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful that even the demigods in other planets would tremble simply by the unfavorable raising of his eyebrow. The demigods in the higher level of material existence many, many times excel the most well-to-do human beings in duration of life, beauty, wealth, paraphernalia, and in all other respects. Still, they were afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Thus, we can simply imagine how powerful Hiranyakashipu was in this material world. But even Hiranyakashipu was cut into small pieces by the nails of Lord Nrsimha. This means that anyone materially powerful cannot stand the strength of the Lord's nails. Similarly, Jamadagna displayed the Lord's power to kill all the disobedient kings powerfully situated in the respective states. The Lord's empowered incarnation Narada and plenary incarnation Varaha? Mm-hmm. As well as indirectly empower Lord Buddha, created faith in the mass of people. The incarnations of Rama and Dhanvantari displayed his fame, and Balarama, Mohini, and Vamana exhibited his beauty. Vritraya, Matsya, Kumara, and Kapila exhibited his transcendental... Yes?
Okay. It's on.
Okay. Kumara and Kapila exhibited his transcendental knowledge. Nara and Narayana Rishis exhibited his renunciation. So all the different incarnations of the Lord indirectly or directly manifested different features. But Lord Krishna, the primeval Lord, exhibited the complete features of Godhead, and thus it is confirmed that he is a source of all other incarnations. And the most extraordinary feature exhibited by Lord Sri Krishna was his internal energetic manifestation of his pastimes with the cowherd girls. His pastimes with the gopis are all displays of transcendental existence, bliss, and knowledge, although these are manifested apparently as sex love. The specific attraction of his pastimes with the gopis should never be misunderstood. The Bhagavatam relates these transcendental pastimes in the 10th canto, and in order to reach the position to understand the transcendental nature of Lord Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, the Bhagavatam promotes the student gradually in 9 other cantos.
Okay, and last paragraph. Somebody else?
According to Srila Shiva Goswami's statement, in accordance with authoritative sources, Lord Krishna is the source of all other incarnations. It is not that Lord Krishna has any source of incarnation. All the symbols of the Lord, all the symbols of the Supreme Truth, and 4 are present in the person of Lord Sri Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord empathetically declares that there is no truth greater than or equal to himself. In this stanza, the word Savyam is particularly mentioned to confirm that Lord Krishna has no other source than himself. Although in other places, incarnations are described, or as Bhagavan, because of their specific functions nowhere, are they declared to be the Supreme Personality. In this stanza, the word Savyam signifies the supremacy as the summum
bonum. Bonum. Nice Latin sloka. Okay. And then one more paragraph. And ladies, 3.
The summum bonum Krishna is one without a second. He himself has expanded himself in various parts, portions, and particles as Svayam Rupa, Svayam Prakasha, Tad Ekatma, Prabhava, Vaibhava, Vilasa, Avatar, Avesha, and Jivas, all provided with innumerable energies just suitable to the respective persons and personalities.
Could you explain each of those, Padma? I'm just kidding. We'll cover those a little bit later. That's okay.
Learned scholars in transcendental subjects have carefully analyzed the summum bonum Krishna to have 64 principal attributes. All the expansions or categories of the Lord possess only some percentages of these attributes. But Sri Krishna is the possessor of the attributes cent per cent, and his personal expansions, such as Svayam Prakash, Tad Ekatma, up to the categories of the avatars, who are all Vishnu Tattva, possess up to 93% of these transcendental attributes. Lord Shiva, who is neither avatar nor avesh, nor in between them, possess almost 84% of these attributes. But the jivas, or the individual living beings in different statuses of life, possess up to the limit of 78% of the attributes. In the conditioned state of material existence, the living being possesses these attributes in very minute quantity, varying in terms of the pious life of the living being. The most perfect of living beings is Brahma, the supreme administrator of one universe. He possesses 78% of the attributes in full. All other demigods have the same attributes in less quantity, whereas human beings possess the attributes in very minute quantity. The standard of perfection for a human being is to develop the attributes up to 78% in full. The living being can never possess attributes like Shiva, Vishnu, or Lord Krishna. A living being can become godly by developing the 78% transcendental attributes in fullness. But he can never become a god like Shiva, Vishnu, or Krishna. He can become a Brahma in due course. The godly living beings, who are all residents of the planets in the spiritual sky, are eternal associates of God in different spiritual planets called Haridham and Maheshadham. The abode of Lord Krishna above all spiritual planets is called Krishna Loka or Goloka Vrindavan. And the perfected living being, by developing 78% of the above attributes in fullness, can enter the planet of Krishna Loka after leaving the present material body.
All right, very good. So, well, Nimai Pandit is switching over to the PowerPoint that's going to untangle that last paragraph. Everyone, please get out your calculators, and we'll figure out these percentages. Okay. This is rather technical information, but before we go unpack it, I just want to make it a very simple statement here. Has anyone experienced this? People ask you, why Krishna? Why Krishna? If you're from a Hindu background, they'll say there's so many avatars, right? If somebody has looked it up, they'll say, well, in the Webster's Dictionary, it says that Krishna is the eighth avatar of Vishnu. So what's so special about him? You know? And if people just don't know much, they say, well, you know, why don't you believe in the God that you were raised with? Right? Anyone ever hear these things besides me? So here is the reason why Krishna is exceptional. It is not just a sentiment that that leads us to worship Krishna, but all of these qualities are described in the scriptures that make Krishna so exceptional. 64 of them in all. They are all categorized by Rupa Goswami, who went through all of the Vedic literatures and picked out these qualities and then defined them and gave examples from Krishna's life. And only Krishna possesses all of them. So there are 50 basic qualities which comprise the 78% that are possessed by all of us to one degree or another. And these 50 are the first ones we'll go through. Let's just, since there's so many of them, I'd like to invite anyone who like, if you're an oral learner like me, you can read them aloud or just listen as you prefer. So we're going to read all 50 qualities in 4 slides. Ready? 1, beautiful features of the entire body. 2, marked with all auspicious characteristics. 3, extremely pleasing. 4, effulgent. 5, strong. 6, ever youthful. 7, wonderful linguist. 8, truthful. 9, a pleasing speaker. 10, fluent. 11, highly learned. 12, highly intelligent. 13, a genius. 14, artistic. 15, extremely clever. 16, expert. 17, grateful. 18, firmly determined. 19, an expert judge of time and circumstances. 10, speaks with the authority of Vedic scriptures. 21, pure. 22, self-control. 23, steadfast. 24, forbearing. 25, forgiving. 26, grave. 27, self-satisfied. 28, possessing equilibrium. 29, magnanimous. 30, religious. 31, heroic. 32, compassionate. 33, respectful. 34, gentle. 35, liberal. 36, shy. 37, the protector of the surrendered souls. 38, happy. 39, well-wisher of devotees. 40, controlled by love. 41, all auspicious. 42, most powerful. 43, all famous. 44, popular. 45, partial to devotees. 46, very attractive to all women. 47, all worshipable. 48, all opulent. 49, all honorable. And 50, the supreme controller. Okay, let's stop there. So, none of us are the supreme controller, but all of us control a little something, right? Our car, our apartment, our shoes. You know, we are the supreme entity within a certain parameter. So this is, all these qualities belong to us in part. Krishna displays them in full, and a living being can become so perfected that all of them become manifest in full. This is, the example is given of Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma possesses all 50 qualities in full, and therefore he's the supreme being within a given universe. At the end of that purport, you recall Prabhupada talks about how when a person becomes that perfect, then they can go back to the spiritual world. they're eligible to enter the supreme abode of Lord Krishna, the highest planet. Now, in the course of our spiritual lives, it's important to realize that these qualities are the byproducts of our spiritual evolution. They are not to be cultivated independently or considered a badge of honor, like one devotee who was at an arti, and he began to feel ecstatic symptoms and the wonderful ecstatic chanting that was going on, and haripilation began to occur, where the hairs on his body stood on end. So rather than modestly keeping that to himself, he started tapping people. Look, look. So this is the immature understanding of spiritual advancement. Mature understanding is that the goal is devotion. The goal is pleasing Krishna. In the course of that pursuit, the good qualities automatically develop. In the fifth canto, there's a verse on this point. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana. Bhagavatya kinchana means one has no business other than pleasing Krishna. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvayar gunayar tatra samasate sura. All the good qualities of the demigods become manifest in that person. Samasate sura. Harava bhaktasya. However, if one is not devoted, kuto mahaguna, where are there any good qualities? Does this mean everybody but devotees is no good? No, it just means that manorate dasato davato bahi, that no matter what happens, they'll always be on the mental platform because of the implicit faith in sense gratification. Manoratena means the chariot of the mind. They'll always be riding the chariot of the mind, going here, going there, because the Weltanschauung, the world view, is that sense gratification will make me happy. So the result of that naturally is that bad qualities develop. If you and I are both after some sense gratification and there's only a certain amount to go around and my goal is to get it, well, then I'll get it at all costs, even if it means you don't get it. This is the result of materialism, right? There is no compassion. There's a lack of modesty, of self-control, all these qualities that we just read. Harab abhaktasya. But in the life of a devotee, these things automatically become manifest. We might recognize them. They're signposts of our advancement, but they're not the ends in and of themselves. They are just a symptom. It's one of the undreamed of benefits of Krishna consciousness. People have no idea. You start chanting Hare Krishna, all of a sudden you become full of good qualities. There's so many examples of, like Mrigari, the hunter. He was trained by his father to half-kill animals. Not only would he kill them for food, but he would half-kill them just to see them suffer. And this absolutely horrible person. So by a brief association with a great devotee, Narada Muni, Mrigari gave up all of his bad habits. But he asked Narada, how will I live? He said, don't worry. Just stop killing animals, chant Hare Krishna, and everything will be provided for you. So this later, Narada came back to visit his disciple. And as he was walking with his friend, I think it was Parasara Muni. Anyway, the two of them were walking. They saw Mrigari brushing ants off the path because he didn't want to risk stepping on them. So these good qualities became manifest. Here's a good quality. It's called punctuality. In fact, it's like advanced punctuality. Just see how all these good qualities become manifest. So those are the 50 basic qualities of a realized person. Yes, Minka? Fulter means bright. Right. Yes, Krishna's brightness is so dazzling it comprises the Brahma Jyoti, which permeates the entire creation. All right. So in the Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami gives examples of each of these 50 qualities in the life of Lord Krishna. For example, I think grateful was mentioned there. One of these. So Krishna's gratitude is demonstrated in one statement he makes that he hears Draupadi say, "Hey, Govinda." Draupadi suffered so many difficulties. Yeah. And when he would hear, he said, "When I hear her say this, then I go in her debt. And every time she says it, I become more indebted to her." This is his statement in the Mahabharata. There's another instance as far as being all famous or all worshipable, I forget. The doorkeeper at Dwarka, where Krishna had his palace, would have to deal with many people coming to visit him. So there's one statement where he says, "My dear Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, you'll have to wait. Krishna is very busy. Lord Indra, please stop reciting prayers. It's not going to help you. Varuna, you just might as well leave. Krishna's not going to have time for you today. He's very, very busy." So this is an example of Krishna being all worshipable. So in this way, all 50 qualities are described in Krishna's pastimes. Okay. Any comments on this? All right, then. Now, in addition to those 50, here are 5 additional qualities that are sometimes manifested in Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Changelessness, all cognizance, ever fresh, Satchitananda, that is possessing an eternal blissful body, and possessing all mystic perfections. In the purport, you remember reading, we read how Lord Shiva, he's neither a jiva, an individual soul, nor a Vishnu tattva, that is an avatar of the Lord, but he is somewhere in between. Nor is he somewhere in between. That's a very nice way of saying it. He's neither this nor that nor in between. In other words, he's in his own category, his own tattva. And this is why he possesses these distinct qualities in difference to all others except Lord Brahma and Lord Krishna. Okay. Any comments? Yes? Yes. Yes. Possessing an eternal blissful body. Yeah. From what I understand, this refers to within the material universe. So, yeah, within this universe, we don't have those opulences. We cannot possess them. Okay. Any other comments? Yes, Fred? Yes, Lord Shiva is responsible for the destruction. So he has to be there to tear it apart. Okay? Different Lord Shivas, yes. It's a, I forget the technical details. There's different, pardon me? Yeah, Sadashi. Can you recall that, Kalyan, from the fifth canto? Yeah, this one. So it's the same in every universe, or different? Like Brahma is a post that's filled by a different living being in every universe. Different in every universe. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Technical questions? Yes, Lacey. He does. There are different Brahmas in different categories. Some of them are more advanced, essentially, than others. Okay, and we read in the third canto about how Lord Brahma, at the beginning of the creation, created these kind of polluted things that attracted him, and he got chastised by his children for being attracted to his own creation. So he gave up that body and accepted another one, and that rejected body is fog. Anyway, the fact that he is the same person and yet could give up his material body, accept another one, this is a kind of changelessness, in a sense, possessing an eternal body, and that he he could change his, at will. But sometimes Lord Krishna himself has to come and fill the post of Lord Brahma. It's such an exalted post. By the way, has anyone studied Mormonism? You know about the philosophy of Mormonism? You might want to know, since we may be presided over by one soon. But their philosophy is very much like this, that Lord, can become like Lord Brahma when you're perfect. You become the god of your own universe. First you become the Jesus of your own universe, and then the god of your own universe. This is so antithetical to Christianity that they don't publicly say this, but this is why the temples are all closed and private. But that's what goes on inside the temple, this idea of perfection coming up to the point of becoming your own Jesus and then your own God. So it's very similar to this position of Lord Brahma in some respects. No, that's not standard Christianity. No, standard Christianity is groveling only. Right? Okay. All right, now here, in addition to those five, here are five more that are found in Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan means Lord Vishnu also. Okay, the four-armed form of the Lord, who is the object of devotion for those who are in the Shanta Ras, just on veneration. He has inconceivable potency. Uncountable universes generate from his body. He is the original source of all incarnations. He is the giver of salvation to the enemies whom he kills. And he is the attractor of liberated souls. These are things even Lord Brahma can't do, that are only found in either Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna. Okay, comments? Questions? Okay, fine. So finally, we come to the last four of the 64 qualities that are possessed only by Lord Krishna. He is the performer of wonderful varieties of pastimes, especially in childhood. He is surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of Godhead. He can attract all living entities all over the universes by playing on his flute. And he has a wonderful excellence of beauty which cannot be rivaled anywhere in the creation. These four qualities are found only in Lord Krishna. Now, as we... Any comments? Okay. So you see how these are progressive. This is where the percentages we read about in the purport come from. Lord Vishnu being able to possess up to 93%, all except these four qualities. And in the chapter 3 of the first canto, which today's verse kind of punctuates, and in the purport to it, we read about how all of these avatars are meant for certain specific purposes. Okay? This is a topic that comes up again in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, a chapter entitled Scheduled Incarnations with Specific Functions. So the point is that Krishna appears according to the need in a given time and place to manifest one of his wonderful attributes for a certain purpose. Does anyone know the verse from the Bhagavad Gita, the famous verse that talks about this subject, how Krishna descends? Yeah, yada yada hi dharmasya, glanir bhavati bharata, abhyutanam dharmasya, tadatmanam shijamyaha. Yes, he comes again and again in various times and places in order to establish dharma and to annihilate adharma, a irreligion. So these avatars come as frequently as ripples, as waves in the ocean. They are innumerable, countless incarnations. Krishna is incarnating, that is appearing in the material world, just reaching out over and over and over again to attract us back to him. He will not force us to come at gunpoint like a stormtrooper. You're going back to Godhead or else. That he just keeps showing these nice pastimes to attract our minds and invite us. He takes so much trouble, but he never forces us. So this is the purpose of the incarnations. So there are three ways in which the Lord exists. The first is called the Swayam Rupa. Swayam means self. And rupa means what? Form. Right. So Swayam Rupa, his own form, this is Krishna himself, one without a second. And at the same time, there is one other Swayam Rupa form of Krishna that we worship regularly. Who is that? Lord Chaitanya. Yes, Lord Chaitanya is distinct amongst all of the avatars because he is Krishna himself. There is no difference. He is Krishna in the form of a devotee. Because devotion to Krishna is so fun and so nice that Krishna himself wants to experience it. So he comes in the form of a devotee. Who would imagine? So Lord Chaitanya is also Swayam Rupa. Then the second category is Tad Ekatma Rupa. And that is in two categories, or two subcategories, Angsa and Kala. Anyone recognize those words? Yes. 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 Means limb. But just in the today's verse, Ete Cha Angsa Kala. All of these incarnations are Pungsa, coming from Vishnu. Ete, Changsa, Kala, Pungsa. They're all coming from the Purusha. But Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. So what this means is that Angsa is directly coming from Krishna. And then Kala are incarnations that come from the Angsas, from the direct expansions of Krishna. So, for example, Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, is directly Angsa coming from Krishna. And then from him come all of these Kalas, from all of the other expansions of Vishnu and other incarnations. So this is the distinction between the Angsa and Kala and amongst the Tad Ekatma Rupas. All the avatars really are found, almost all of them are found in this category, the main ones, in the second category. Menka? Mm-hmm. It's just like if somebody were writing a play and they were a character in the play. All the other characters are entering stage left. So the author, as one of the characters, also enters stage left. You see? So he doesn't want to come out on stage and say, I'm the author. Why? Because that would break the suspension of disbelief which is necessary to enjoy the play. So, if anything, he doesn't want anyone to understand he is the author. And in the same way, Krishna appears in the same, through the same venue as the other avatars. But all of the scriptural evidence shows us that Krishna is the source of Vishnu. So they all come through Lord Vishnu. In fact, at the beginning of the 10th canto, when we read about Krishna's descent, we read that the earth is in great distress. So, in her personal form, she goes to the demigods and says, please help me. I'm just overburdened by all these armies and these terrible people. And the gods say, we can't help you. Let's go see Lord Vishnu. And then Lord Vishnu tells them, don't worry, Krishna will be coming personally. So there is this covering on Krishna's position, even from the beginning of his pastimes. Then at the end of the 10th canto, there's another interesting pastime where Arjuna is trying to protect the sons of the Brahmin. This Brahmin's sons keep dying. And it's very inauspicious and inappropriate for the sons to die before their parents die. But they just keep disappearing, and Arjuna, the great warrior, can't stop it. So then they subsequently discover that they've all gone to Lord Vishnu. So Krishna takes Arjuna and on the chariot to go see Lord Vishnu. And when they are there together, Lord Vishnu says in his deep rumbling voice, I have just taken these sons, these boys, because I wanted to see both of you. And Krishna behaves very respectfully before him because Arjuna could not imagine his friend being in a superior position to Lord Vishnu. You see? They're all very subtle intricacies, but in the Bhagavad Gita, there are countless statements, I mean, not countless, but numerous statements about how Krishna is superior to Lord Vishnu. Sutre mani gana iva. Everything comes from me. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartite. Everything is resting on me. What are some others? Pardon me? Maya dakshena prakriti. Suyate sa characharam. Hetuna. Kondpeya. He is the cause of all causes. So Vishnu ostensibly is the God of the universe, you know, the original cause. But Krishna is the cause of Lord Vishnu. Vishnu, in fact, is just the manifestation of Krishna that is dealing with the whole creation and destruction of the material universe. Just a minor part of the greater scene going on in the spiritual world. See? So this is Angsa in Kala. Vishnu is an Angsa, but not by any means. He's a plenary portion, but he's not the whole of Krishna by any means. You see? Okay? Okay, so here are the five... Yes, go ahead.
Yes.
Right, he's delegating all this other stuff to others. And it's so well, he doesn't even worry about it. And this is the amazing bigotry that I've encountered in my years as a devotee. That you think the bigotry or ignorance, you know, people will say, how can Krishna be God? And they know nothing about Krishna. Or they read just enough to get some idea. Oh, how could he be God? He's dancing with other women's wives. I mean, other men's wives. How could he be God doing this immoral thing? And to which Srila Prabhupada said, actually, everybody is coming from Krishna. So the real question is, why are you dancing with Krishna's wife? If somebody else could define Krishna... No, I refuse to stop class 4 minutes early. I haven't finished. That's right, you can bring it in, but I'm not stopping. Don't start serving quite. See, the grand finale is coming. That's all right. Oh, okay, that's... So I just want to finish up this point. That people do not know anything about all of these wonderful attributes of Krishna. And yet they're very quick to assume Krishna can't be God, as if he's some other God than their own God. as if my God can beat up your God. God by definition means he's the supreme. There is no one greater than or equal to. That is the definition of God. Somebody to whom no one is greater than or equal to. So if you know somebody better than Krishna, then tell us. And we'll forget all about Krishna and worship that person. Otherwise, you worship Krishna. You know? I mean, the idea of God as an old man with a beard, which is the general idea, if you Google God, that's probably the picture you get, right? On the Sistine Chapel. And Michelangelo, in trying to picture God, conjectured, well, he's the oldest dude. He's the original, so he must have the longest beard. So the whole picture, he's got the longest beard. So if you were God and could be in any form that you wished, would you be in a 125-year-old man's body? Or would you be in a 16-year-old body? You know? This is just, it's actually bigotry. But it's very difficult. It's very difficult to talk with people about this point. As soon as you say Krishna, they become immediately polarized in their minds, you know, sectarian, and think so many kind of negative things based on the conditioning or based largely on what the British did in India to discredit the Vedic culture. You know, they gave all this rap about paganism and polytheism, you know, because there's countless incarnations, so they say Hinduism is polytheistic. See? And to a lot of Hindus who don't know much more, they say, yeah, sure, there's so many gods. But what the Bhagavad Gita says is very simple. It's very monotheistic. No, Krishna says, Nate vidu sura gana, that the great sages, the gods don't know me because I'm their origin. They don't distinguish between God and demigod. So anyway, these are some of the reasons why Krishna is supreme. The reasons are countless, but he is able to manifest in all these different ways. Here are five different categories of incarnations in this Tadekatma Rupa division. Purusha avatars, the Vishnus creating and maintaining the universes. Lila avatars, incarnations that come for fun, pastimes. Guna avatars, the incarnations of the three modes of nature, qualitative modes of Brahma is in charge of the mode of passion. Yeah, Brahma creates. And Shiva's in charge of ignorance because, yeah, he destroys. And then who's in charge of maintenance? It has to be Vishnu because maintenance is so hard. That's the hard part. And these are the guna avatars, the three guna avatars. Manvan avatars are the avatars who come as manus or associated with the manus, who are the chief administrators of the universe under Brahma and these different yugas. And then the yuga avatars who come in the various ages, one for each age. So in this way, the Tadekatma Rupas are full of subdivisions and more divisions and constitute innumerable varieties in every species of life to attract the souls who are stuck in that particular species. And every time and through intellect, such as Kapila, or through brute force, such as Narasimha, or through beauty, such as Vamana, and all these different qualities of Krishna accentuated in each particular incarnation. This is just a tiny display of his opulence, because again, all these incarnations are just for the material world. So finally, the Avesha Rupa. This is also known as Shakyavesha, when Krishna empowers a living being to demonstrate a particular quality in full. These are generally jivas, although there are some exceptions, such as Kapila and Anantasesha and others. Okay, but generally, when an individual soul who is not God in any way becomes empowered by God to act like God, that's considered an incarnation of God also. And Jesus Christ is a great example of this category. Not the Father, but it totally empowered to be like the Father. All right. Thank you very much. Any comments or questions? Now, time has actually expired. Andy? Okay.
In terms of like invest and so like to enter into the place inside.
Interesting.
So my question is that sometimes there can be a criticism of Christianity, and that's like the only religion around, where they say, well what would happen to people who came before Jesus Christ descended, right?
Right.
And it creates a lot of doubt for people to the point that like Dante even has to, explain it, where he's talking about noble pagans, and well, they don't go to hell, but they don't go to heaven because they didn't turn into people. We have this idea that Goloka Vrindavan is the highest planet in the spiritual world. And then Krishna comes in, in our age, so he came in, for a particular yuga. Now, what about the people for whom Ram is the incarnation? So are they denied access to these higher levels?
No.
Or is that even the right way to talk about it when you talk about gradations of the spiritual world? We say highest planet.
No, it's not, that's our material conception that, well, I really want to make it to Goloka, I don't want to be satisfied with Vaikuntha, you know. the fulfillment of each devotee at each individual level is so thorough that there's no aspiration for anything more. Yeah, it's complete. It's our constitutional position. And although these rasas are presented in grades, you know, that Madhurya rasa is considered a higher rasa because it contains all the elements of the others, The devotee subjectively doesn't experience an intense hankering. Oh, I don't. Arjuna's not thinking, I wish I could be one of the gopis. Although Bhishma, who was marked very martial, expressed such a sentiment, or at least a great appreciation and a desire to enter into that mood. So the point is, it is beyond our ordinary material conception.